Inside Red Bull Bora Hansgrohe, Air Podcast von OVB Online zur Tour. For 3 weeks, we'll accompany Germany's biggest and most successful cycling team through the Tour de France with team manager Ralf Denk. Do you have questions for Ralf Denk? Send them to tobias.ruf@ovbmedia.de. And now, enjoy the new episode.
Welcome back to the OVB podcast, all about the Tour de France. My name is Corbinian Sauter, and we're starting our 2026 season a bit differently than usual. It's going to be a special episode, because for one thing, I'm sitting here in person for the first time opposite Ralf Denk, the team boss of Red Bull Bora Hansgrohe. Hey, Ralf.
Hey.
And for another, I'm not just sitting anywhere, but at the headquarters of the Bora company. As many of you know, a longtime companion, name sponsor for many years, probably the most famous missing extractor hood in all of cycling. Willy Bruckbauer is also here with us. Hey, Willy.
Hey there. Hello.
We're here now. We have about 10 days until the Tour de France, until it starts on July 4th in Barcelona. And as an important note, right off the bat, since this is the first episode this year, we're back, as you can hear. And accordingly, in this edition, there will be an episode together every day of the tour where we talk to Ralf. And indeed, after each stage, you can expect a new episode very, very quickly, as usual. And we have the opportunity to dive really deep again. Today, something else is in the foreground. Just to get into it, we'll shed some light on the whole history. And of course, in Willy, we have someone here who can offer a Bora perspective on the whole thing. Sitting opposite you both now, you look relatively relaxed, considering we only have barely 2 weeks left. How are you doing, and which of you is perhaps more tense now before the hot phase begins?
Yeah, tough question, but I think I'm a bit more tense because I'm responsible for the sporting side of the team, and we have a very difficult task nominating the riders this week. Only 8 riders are allowed to ride in the Tour de France. We have a squad of 30. And if you ask the riders in December who wants to go to the tour, 30 hands go up. So everyone wants to ride, and it's a difficult exercise to select 8 out of 30.
I can imagine, especially since, yeah, a few have already put themselves forward. We'll touch on that briefly later. Also a teaser, there will, of course, be another episode in a few days after the announcement where my colleague will sit down and present the final team. Willy, what is actually your task right now? Can you sit back and relax because everything is done from a main sponsor's perspective, or how are you doing 10 days before the tour?
Yes, actually, as Ralf said, the big role lies with him. My job is relatively simple. I have to pay. That's my role. Yeah, the division of roles works well because I've never been someone to interfere much in the team. That's Ralf's role, and he does that much better than we could on the Bora side.
Okay. Your connection is still not quite common for, let's call it, normal sponsor, as it might come about in cycling. You've known each other for a very, very long time. Maybe you can tell us, Willy, how did you meet? How do you know each other? And yeah, how did this special connection come about?
I'm actually from Rosenheim, born in Rosenheim, and then rode for a Bruckmühl club at some point, Götting Bruckmühl. To be precise, that's where Ralf rode as a young rider. Maybe you can tell us, Willy, how did you meet? How do you know each other? And yeah, how did this special connection come about? I'm actually from Rosenheim, born in Rosenheim, and then rode for a Bruckmühl club at some point, Götting Bruckmühl, to be precise. That's where Ralf rode as a young rider, and that's where we met. Ralf was, I think, 13, somewhere around there, and I was about 20. And we've known each other since then, experienced a lot together, also rode many races together, him in the schoolboy classes, youth classes, me in the amateur classes for Götting Bruckmühl. And yeah, it's been,
wow, 40 years.
I'd say 40 years ago.
Very good. We have someone here who is, I think, much more solid on the dates. We were just saying or guessing in the pre-talk how long the sponsor connection between you has existed. And
with Ralf, it came like a shot. He could name exact key dates. Willy had to think for a moment. But you never raced against each other because you were in different age groups, right? We raced together once. That was Ralf's last junior year and my last amateur year. So his last junior year right before he came to the amateur class. And for me, it was my last year, 25, back then in the sea. And we rode the Copenhagen 6-day race together. That was actually a very nice experience. On the 6-day track, you're always in pairs. So both are equally fast or equally slow.
Who was faster?
So you even started in one team?
Yes, always two-man teams. And we competed against, respectively, various nations.
Exactly. And now we still ride now and then, but we never race anymore.
Okay. We also have to say, as has already been mentioned, 6-day races, junior class and so on. You both rode really well. How was it for you? You were already definitely up there in the extended German top tier, I'd say. What made you decide not to go fully professional?
You do it with maximum passion. You get up in the morning, you think about cycling, you eat lunch, you think about cycling, and you go cycling. But you notice once you leave Bavaria and ride at the German level, it gets harder. And then when you ride a few Italian races, you eventually realize your personal talent has hit its limit. You can get to the front at some point. And we did get to the front now and then, but it was already very hard. When it gets international, you have to decide at some point, is cycling going to support me so I can make a living or is it not? And at some point, you have to make that decision. And I made the decision at 25 to choose a job. Then I did my master carpenter certificate. Then at some point across the street, I opened the Werkhaus, the first retail store, and that's how it started for me. And a few years later, Bora came along. It's always a difficult farewell to cycling. You're really attached to it with a lot of heart back then. But you have to be rational at some point, because I can't ride as an amateur until I'm 30, 35 and basically earn no money.
Ralf, how was it for you? I know your attitude a bit. I think you say, if it's not enough to reach the very, very, very top, why do it at all?
Yeah, the decision was made for both of us why we didn't become professional riders, because we simply weren't good enough. It's relatively simple. And from today's perspective, and I think I can speak for Willy too, it was a strength for both of us that we let go of our beloved sport and focused on work. Willy as a carpenter and me in the bicycle industry.
Which then brought you back together a few years later. Can you tell us how that came about? Did you think at some point, now I have my own cycling team? I once rode very fast laps on the track in a team with someone, and he has a very successful company. Could that fit? Or how did you stay in touch? Or how did this story around Bora come about?
Yes, there are several levels. So one level is in the year 2000, Willy built the Werkhaus and was able to win me over as a tenant for a bike shop. I opened it there in 2000. It still exists today, run by Oliver Blas. That was one level. And the other level was that I also managed cycling teams in parallel since the year 2000. First in mountain biking, then in youth classes, and then from 2010 under the American sponsor NetApp for the first time with the pros. And with NetApp, we also rode our first Tour de France in 2014 as main partner. And then in 2015, Bora took over. And the reasons why Bora took over, Willy can explain that better than me.
Why did Bora take over, Willy?
Well, we had a luxury problem in a way. We had an idea that you extract the vapor over a cooktop and no longer upwards. The idea went viral in a way because it makes sense at some point, as we know today. The idea has been confirmed by all competitors. And back then the issue was, I had an idea, I had a retail store, nobody knew the Bora brand and nobody knew me either. We had to get publicity somehow. And if you do all that through some normal ad formats, through TV spots, through text ads or newspaper ads, which still existed back then, or digital ads, then the advertising effort is quite big in euros. So we needed brand awareness somehow. And eventually then, not just in 2015, but actually it already started in 2012. Ralf said, man, if you want to do something like that, you've got your first dealers. I found the first dealers. Why don't you come along to the Tour de France? And then in 2012, we got a small sticker. with Bora on the sleeve of Ralph's jersey. We already had permission back then to go to Paris at the end of the Tour de France. We invited the first dealers. I noticed the dealers were on fire for it. All the dealers had already been to a football stadium, but nobody had ever been to the Tour de France in Paris on the Champs-Élysées. And this being different, this out-of-the-box thinking, actually prompted us to just think closer, 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 or to think with more depth. And then at some point, it was around 2014, and Ralph came and said, NetApp has fulfilled its contract. We've come pretty far. They won't renew the contract. And then we said to Ralph, show me the contract or tell me the contract terms. What would it be like if we took over the package? And yes, I think within 2 or 3 weeks, a commitment came from my side. With us, there's often no long hesitating. When we think about something, we think about it briefly and then a decision is made. And so Ralph ultimately had the security that it would continue. Yes, and so one thing led to another and we became the main sponsor. That made a big wave. I did my first press conference where like 6, 8 TV stations were standing there because everyone expected something really big. That was at the start of the Tour de France 2014. How was that, right? 14, yes.
On the rest day. Rest day in Besançon.
On the rest day.
In Besançon, in the Vosges, we were there and had a small hotel. And in the room next to us in the hotel, suddenly there were only journalists and TV cameras. And then it was revealed, it's Bora. And the press speculated something really big and really special back then. That was actually a huge blessing for us. And so the publicity went straight through the roof.
And they were asking who is Bora?
It's often called.
They already knew you then.
Yes, but Willy might be downplaying that a bit now. It wasn't actually that small because we did have, we can talk openly about it, a doping problem in cycling in the early 2000s. And Willy was one of the first who, as I always say, took advantage of the low point and saw the opportunity. And that's a bit like when you invest in sports, it's no different than investing in the stock market. You can't buy at peak prices. You have to get in when the prices are down, right? And cycling at that time was extremely cheap relative to the reach it generated. And that's why, from my perspective today, 14 years later, it was a clever move to invest in cycling precisely to significantly increase the brand awareness of Bora and not just in Germany, but globally.
Yes, the cycling team stock invested at a favorable time, but you still hold the stock. How cheap was that stock package? Can we name a ballpark figure or will I not get anything out of you?
Maybe I'll just briefly finish answering the question from earlier, and then I won't forget the question, though. Because Ralph says it wasn't that small, because the fact that it wasn't quite that small is actually true. I often make some things smaller than they are. But back then, I had excellent marketing advice from someone who accompanied me for many years. And among other things, he also tracked the press contacts. And we commissioned clipping from an agency to see how often we were mentioned somewhere in magazines, on social media or wherever. And there would always be, I don't know how many, very manageable newspaper ads or PR ads or PR reports. And then when the press conference happened, moving boxes arrived in a sprinter with all the newspapers and clippings inside. It had a huge impact. So much so that the moment the press conference was in Besançon back then in France, he had to cancel the clipping service immediately because he didn't even have room for that many moving boxes in his basement. It made a huge wave, which a normal marketing consultant had never known in that dimension. The whole thing really had power. And now to your question that you just asked, well, what kind of amount was it? Yes, it was a very, very small $1 million amount that we invested back then. And of course, you always think, is it really worth it? And there are two goals we pursued. One is, as I just said, that we have the right and the opportunity to actually invite dealers to France. And that is incredibly emotional when you are on the Champs-Élysées today and you can rent boxes like that from the organizer. And yeah, you have like 20 or 30 or 40 dealers there with you. And at some point, the race is over. Very rarely do we win. Mostly, we're still doing reasonably well. And then the riders come after 3 weeks, starting somewhere completely different through all the mountains, through the wind, through the rain now and then somehow arrive totally sweaty at the front and are standing just 2 meters away from the fans and from our dealers. And that is already incredibly emotional for the dealers, what that triggers. When you then have the opportunity to go out for dinner with the team, which we then, yes, as a rule do, and there the fan can actually go up and say, can I take a photo or can I ask a quick question? Yep. And then it's an international team. We usually have international guests with us. And if there's a Czech rider and a Czech dealer, that's an unbelievable match in terms of emotional impact. And that's like the one big point we have as a goal. And the second point we have as a goal is to simply increase brand awareness. Mm-hmm. And we evaluate this from our side, from Bora's side, every year, and look at how the brand is changing. How has the brand become more well-known? And it's actually still rising. There's still a lot of room for improvement. And the second question we then ask is, how do you know the company? Of course, more and more comes from architects, from acquaintances, from TV commercials. But the share that actually comes from cycling is, in cycling, we find it so large that we say for ourselves that the investment made is 100% in a very good ratio. And that's why we've been doing it for so long.
Mm-hmm. That sounds like a, if I'm honest, hard-nosed business analysis, first of all. So really, what is the bottom line? That's probably how it's thought of from a sponsor's perspective. But now in your case, you haven't just been, as we heard, the main and naming sponsor for a very, very long time since in 2014, but you've also known each other forever. How can I imagine this interaction, be it at the tour, be it in advance during negotiations? Do you sit down once a year or do you follow it continuously and sometimes have, do you have some kind of say in what the team or similar is concerned, or do you at least have some data given to you? How can one imagine that in the background between the two of you? Because it's not just about numbers, is it?
So basically it is very numbers driven. It's not an emotional or personal decision. Even if people think, oh, that's our cycling team, it's still a business that Ralf has to run and that we have to run as well. Same with the measurability. Does it make sense? The employees ask, why are you doing all this? And they see that it makes sense. If it had just been, how do you say, a hobby, it wouldn't have worked. Mm-hmm. And how do we do it? Well, we actually never sit down together. I mean, we haven't sat down together in 20 years. We never do.
Today is the day. An exception.
This is the first time we've done something like this.
Yeah, it's an exception, yeah, for us to be sitting in meeting rooms like this.
We have only just done a podcast. So this is only the second podcast I've done. No, how does it work for us? It's really ongoing. There is certainly never a week where we don't have contact or haven't had contact over the last 40 years. There has never been a week here where we weren't in touch. That's not just because of business, but also a mutual interest. Now we have a business interest. Before it was on a fan basis, like how is this or that going? And whenever you have some time, you just call. And if there's anything, you also have a quick call. And besides that, our offices are right next to each other. So there's no other office in between. And that's how we are also relatively close. Ralf doesn't live far from me. Mm-hmm. And when Ralf has time and has something to discuss, we go for a bike ride together. Or very rarely we go out for dinner and discuss something. But that's pretty much how it works for us. And that's been the case since we met.
Mm-hmm. Direct channels and accordingly quick decisions.
And without meetings.
Ja, und mit der Länge Vertrauen. Und I think when you work so closely and with such a short contract, then of course you have to trust feel what is important to the other person. And I think we have worked together very, very well on an equal footing over the last few years. And yesterday, for example, I sent Willy 10 names to get his opinion zum Tour de France Aufgebot. Aber I just get a reply, thanks for letting me know, but you handle this. Aber so how you pass the ball back and Bora's Hauptpartner, the main partner, doesn't say we need a rider from this nation or that nation. Fahrer bei der Tour de France, sondern bekommt dann nur Merci Druck und ja, das machst du schon. Ja. And I haven't done it yet, so we still have to do that in the next few days. Will ultimately be at the start in Barcelona.
Yeah, but the list is down to 10, is what I'm hearing.
Yeah, normally when you select, you do 10, 12, you also need replacements. You can still nominate replacements up to 24 hours before the final start. That means if someone gets sick 2 days before, if someone crashes in training, then you do have the option to nominate someone. Once the race has started, then that's it. Then it's different from soccer. So if something happens on the first stage, if someone gets sick or crashes, then you continue with 7 riders.
Yeah. We are assuming, or rather it was clearly communicated, that at least 2 names are very fixed at the very top of this list, with Florian Lipowitz and Remco Evenepoel. I assume nothing has changed there?
No. So as of today, no. Both are fit. Both have had a great preparation. Trouble-free preparation, but also a different preparation because they also rode different races in the spring. And as of today, both will be fit at the start next Saturday in Barcelona.
Wonderful. And as for everyone else who will be standing around them, I won't probe any further, for the reason that my colleague will do that as soon as it's finalized. That won't take much longer either. The team announcement, there will be an extra episode about that. I wanted to go back to, because you described very nicely how things work between you. Does it still work that way, or has anything changed now that this brand that gives you wings has also joined? Because they did come with a big budget. They came with equity shares. How was that between you? You didn't sit down. You don't do that. We learned. But what was the exchange like? And did that perhaps also shift the roles a bit, or is everything as before?
Yeah, for me, transparency was super important here as well. And when this was in the making, there were repeated discussions, mostly on the bike. And for me, 2 things were extremely important. On the one hand, I already had the big goal of being the first team manager to bring Red Bull into cycling. There had already been many attempts by my colleagues, but nobody managed it. And on the other hand, there still had to be enough room for the partners, whom I am incredibly grateful to, who actually led the team into the World Tour, so into the first division of cycling. And those were the financial injections from Bora, from Hansgrohe, from Specialized. And that had to be integrated. And I think in hindsight, we succeeded very, very well. And for me, it was a prerequisite that we integrate that, because otherwise Red Bull wouldn't have come to us either.
Willi, from your perspective, what did Red Bull's entry trigger for you initially, and how do you see your role since then? Has it changed in any way?
Of course, it was when Ralf came to us, and Ralf was very transparent and came to us very early. So not just to Bora, but also to Hansgrohe. You have to work very closely with Hansgrohe. Of course, I spoke with the managing director of Hansgrohe, with the board. And back then it was very important to us that Red Bull didn't just run over us with their marketing power and we'd fall by the wayside, that we'd always be, so to speak, the 5th or 6th wheel on the wagon. That was important to us, and that was also a promise back then when we went to Salzburg that came from Red Bull, and they are sticking to that 100%. We can do as we please, just like before, only with the big advantage that the reach is just huge. So what Red Bull is also doing for our brand is incredibly big. People underestimate this marketing power that Red Bull has. When the riders get off the bus today, the fans are in front of the bus and the bus is packed for us. With many other buses, that's not the case. And looking at it from today's perspective, yes, of course, Red Bull is dominant in the naming and in the visibility, but we benefit enormously from the increased reach. And when I look at the team from 3 years ago compared to the team now, it's very, very different. And also when you have a bit of a budget, you have someone for nutrition that didn't exist back then. You have the medical staff that never existed. Also the medical support that comes from the Red Bull hospital. Red Bull has its own sports hospitals. 2 of them in the world, I think. Or is it 2?
Yeah, you don't say hospitals, performance centers.
Yeah.
But there's one in Salzburg and then one in Los Angeles. And yes, that is sports, performance, medicine at the highest level. And we are super proud that we can access that.
And that's something that we as a cooktop manufacturer could never offer. And that matches wonderfully, and it shows right now in our position in the world rankings. We are significantly further ahead than 3 years ago. And that is indeed thanks to the partnership with Red Bull. We are very grateful for that. So for us, it's working out well.
Thank goodness. How are things going now? Or how do you look ahead to the coming weeks? How do you follow it? Do you also send quick messages back and forth with Ralf? And what are perhaps also your expectations now with more possibilities, more budget, etc.? The expectations of a sponsor like Bora must be rising too, right?
I mean, of course you wish for it, right? When I look at, let's just call it working together. We won Paris-Roubaix. We sat in the car together when Peter Sagan won. And we were together in Norway when Peter Sagan became world champion on the road. We won the Giro, or the team won the Giro. We've already won the Vuelta when we were in Madrid, and there's still one jersey missing. And to be fair, you have to say we can't manage the whole thing on our own. With today's lineup, I have to say, if a few things go well, we will be relatively far up there. Whether it's enough to win on paper, that's looking, I think, not quite as good.
Then a Slovenian has something against it.
There are a few who are still faster on paper. But you know yourself, in this cycling sport, so much can happen so quickly. So we do assume that at some point we'll be allowed to hang that last missing jersey, the yellow jersey, here in these rooms, eventually.
Eventually? Can you be more specific?
Yeah. So we have absolute dominance now by Tadej Pogacar. That's no secret. And he's currently riding on another planet. Beating him in a head-to-head duel is going to be damn difficult. We will certainly use the strategy of if he or his team makes any mistake, we have to be on our guard. We might have to exploit this mistake. Head to head will definitely be difficult, but we are also looking at the next few years. And thanks to the entry now with Red Bull, we also have the opportunity to focus heavily on the youth, on the U19s, which have existed since 2007. We internationalized them. The U23s, they are new since last year, and we are world number one in the U19s. We are currently world number one in the U23s. So we have the best youth project. And our idea is that the man who will hopefully replace Pogacar at some point in the next few years is already riding here. And that is a bit of our strategy, to also focus a lot on the youth and not on the very expensive transfers that have happened now. We don't need to make a secret of it either. We transferred Roglic, we transferred Remco Evenepoel, but that's not the basic idea to walk through the paddock with suitcases of money in the next few years and buy people up. But in the best case scenario, they should already come to us as 16 or 17 year olds. And we've really built up a very, very big foundation by now. And thanks to the partnerships, not just Red Bull, but also Bora, also Hansgrohe, we are sexy enough that the 16 year olds absolutely want to come to us.
So that means long-term planning. On the one hand, with Bora, I assume that connection will remain. And on the other hand, is that a time horizon? I mean, Pogacar isn't that old yet. He could potentially ride for a few more years if he doesn't lose interest. How do you plan for that, really being right at the very front to actually grab that yellow jersey?
Well, planning for the yellow jersey is the sporting side of things, which is what Ralf does. But how do we plan on our side? Yes, at the end of the year, there's also an evaluation. We commission that. How has the brand changed in a positive way? And if the numbers are good, we extend. If the numbers should stagnate at some point, then we'll certainly find a solution with Ralf. We definitely don't want to pull out.
All right. Then we look forward with excitement to the coming days. We will, of course, follow all the sporting action up close again together with Ralf. First of all, for today, thank you both very much for this special episode of Inside Red Bull Bora Hansgrohe.
Thank you.
Thanks.
That was the latest edition of Inside Red Bull Bora Hansgrohe, the podcast from OVB Online on the Tour de France. You can find the podcast on all popular podcatchers and on the websites of OVB Media and IPEN Media. Thanks for listening, and see you next time.